All right, I'm going to call this meeting of the Lew Calumet River Basin Development Commission to order for Wednesday, May 21st, 2025. Please set your phones on stun and let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Lambert, nice to see you. We call roll, please.
Tom Rosinski.
Here.
Tom Gazdecki.
Present.
Anthony Brodnix.
Sand.
How about mute?
You have to unmute yourself.
Sign language.
Dave Castellanos. Absent. Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert Ochi. Absent. LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. We have a quorum. Next up is statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us with what's going on out there, please come up to the podium, state your name and address for the record. Going once, going twice, be there none. Closing the statements to the board from the floor. Next up is the approval of the minutes from April 16th, 2025. Modifications, motions, what say you?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make a motion that we go ahead and approve the minutes as presented for the April 16th meeting.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Out there for everybody to see. Next up is the chairman's report. That's still me. We're here to take care of a $275 million man-made flood control project in the watershed that feeds stormwater into that. If you don't do the maintenance on something of this nature, you can see from some of the pictures around the office of what happens when you don't do that maintenance. Moving forward, we're far better prepared now as a community than we were prior to the flood of 2008. Never lose sight, we're trying to manage Mother Nature. If you get 10 gallons of water for our 5-gallon bucket, we're gonna have some issues, but we're gonna be far better prepared today than we were prior to the flood in 2008. Let's not lose sight of the fact of why we're doing this and the reason that we're here. Unfortunately, it took trauma in the area for us to be able to realize that if you don't take care of something, water doesn't flow through culverts like that when they're blacked up like that. So it's fundamental, it's infrastructure, but it's also economic development from the standpoint of now. We don't have mandatory flooding insurance for over 4,000 properties. That puts $4 million every year back into the community. I say that's a pretty good deal. Enough about that. Next up.
Mr. Chair, can I please interrupt for a second? With regards to the minutes, I was absent, so I abstain from approval of minutes. I'm not sure how that impacts what was done.
Doesn't.
For the record, thank you.
All that matters. Next up is the approval of claims for May 2025. We need a motion to pay the bills.
Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the claims for May of 2025 in the amount of $533,827.50.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All right, we're paying the bills. Mr. Repay.
Sure. The first one is to the city of Crown Point for the Sowerman Woods project. It's for $151,413.05. There is still about $100,000 still remaining on that project. And they're looking to close that out here in July and a grand opening for sometime in August. So that's the largest claim on the bills or on the claim sheet. We have Hassey Construction for $42,914.38. That is for a partial payment for the culvert cleanings underneath the expressway. There's four culverts underneath the expressway, and there's similar ones that run underneath Georgia. If you haven't been out there, I know we sort of invited some of you out there, although a little bit dangerous. They have to build a cofferdam, take the bobcat through, clean them out, inspect them. We were able to have NDOT go out there with us on all four of them, or three of the four of them, I should say. So they all have come out okay and acceptable. So once they get the report, then they'll be paid the remainder of that of their fee, which is the not to exceed contract. We have HWC for $20,425 for Optimus Lake Design. United Consulting, which is designing the stormwater lift station that is that was owned by NDOT that turned over their rights to Highland and Wicker Park, which then ultimately signed over their rights to us. So that is allowing us to then redesign that pump station the way it should be, which would allow Wicker Park some relief from bringing out that the 1950 pump station, and then also likely reduce the need for two gate stations that are located just to the west. One is to the west, one's to the east of the pedestrian bridge over there between Wicker Park and Walmart. HASI's done 30 U.S. Geological Survey, which is our quarterly payment for our gauges. We have some legal fees, and we have Garcia for $10,385 for the maintenance GS. So every time we buy a property or we make some changes, they have to upgrade it. So we actually just gave them the, what was it, 80-some properties we just bought on tax sale. So now those are all uploaded onto the website that we have.
Copy that.
Any other questions?
Any questions for Mr. Repay about paying the bills?
I should say we're also mowing for the first time. For the first time, we mowed last week.
Go ahead.
For the whole levy for C&H.
Is this executive director's report or paying the bills?
Oh, this is paying the bills. Okay. I looked at the bill. It was $28,500. I thought it was important to discuss.
And how many did we mow last year? Five or six?
Six, I believe.
All right. So let's plan on six again this year, huh?
That's right. I don't want it, but the way the weather's looking at right now, as wet as it is.
And gentlemen, if you guys on Zoom have questions or want to say something, you got to wave your hand because I'm not watching TV. I would be watching the Pacers if I was. Any other questions for Mr. Repay?
Is this about the same time we started mowing last year or earlier or later?
It's about the same time. We try to coordinate it around like Memorial Day. And make it work so it's every 5 to 6 weeks. So then the next one, we in theory should be the end of June. Thankfully, we mowed it late as we did last year in November because it allowed us then to have easy access for our inspections for the core. And we didn't have to do it. Well, if you guys remember April's weather, it was still snowing. So it really is just weather dependent. It gets dicey when it gets into October, November. We don't want it to become too wet. So we're sliding, and that's why we sort of delayed this first cut because it was wet. We found a window that we could get in there and make the cut. And by the way, standards, everyone's like, well, why don't you keep it longer? Standards for Army Corps is no longer than a foot. So that's what we try to stick with.
Any other questions about the bills? We have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Pat Wyszynski.
Yes.
Pat Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnix.
Yes.
Couldn't hear you.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos? You're on mute.
There's too much gray hair there.
Dave, you're on mute.
He's talking.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Can't make this stuff up. Next up is the executive director's report. You're up, Mr. Repay. What's going on in the field other than the things you already talked about?
Well, we'll start with inspections and the Army Corps, which is going to be a great topic.
We're leading with that.
Yeah, I might as well.
All right.
Pick it off right up the top. So we finished the Gary inspections along with Griffith inspections. We were minimally acceptable, at least on the draft copy. We think that's where it's going to hold. They're going to send it to us formally. Then we'll ultimately post it to our website. So another year, basically from Klein Avenue to 65 is considered acceptable, to them. The problem is we still have to do Hammond and Munster and Highland. And I think I told you guys this before about 6 months, maybe longer ago, that we thought we were going to have to do them by ourselves because they weren't going to have enough money. Well, that became a reality today when I talked to them. They only have money for one person to do the inspection.
And normally how many people?
8 to 12. 20? 8 to 12, depending. Sometimes they have some interns that could raise above that. But usually you put two per gate, three per pump station, and then there's about three or so on the levee. So what you do is you have one person on the crest and two people on either side. on the gates, you have one person just for safety purposes, and then depending on how extreme they want to get with the pump stations, they could have three, they could have four, they could have some interns with them. So what we're forced with or faced with now is they have one person. They may get a second, but that's not going to do it for that segment of the of our levy. It's half of it, almost half of it. So what we're going to need to do, because we're not going to want to not inspect the levies, my suggestion is to hire a third party that has no affiliation with Hammond Sanitary District or Hammond, for instance, and Highland to do the inspections of the pump stations. We need to know that they work. If you remember, our agreements are contingent on whether they pass those inspections. That we have a roadmap using the old CORES inspection booklets to sort of see whether those pump stations are in working order. So that's with respect to the pump stations. The gates, and I had a talk with the Corps today, what we devised is, we don't want to fail the gates. We want to know if the gates work. So what they suggested is if we took pictures of the gate open and closed and have a timestamp and then send it to them, that's what we're going to have to do. Now, mind you, there's probably, I should have gotten this number, but I would guess that number to be at least 40 gates between Hammond, Highland, and Munster. So it's not optimal, but as far as making sure the system is working, I mean, that's what we kind of have to do. The communities are for it. They said that they would do it as a part of our regular O&M meeting that we had today. Irony was, the Hammond and Island and Munster came, they left. The Corps was a little bit on the tardy side. And so I had to talk to them after the fact. But all the communities were in favor of doing that. Inspected it themselves, and then what would happen is the Corps would then walk the levees and do the levee component by themselves.
Could I ask a question?
I told you this was a good
one. So if we have a third party doing the federal government's work, will they sign the paperwork off? Because don't they have to sign the paperwork to give it to FEMA to make sure that the federal flood insurance stays intact? We don't know.
I don't know.
So we can do the work third party to make sure the system operates the way it was designed, but we're not going to be able to get it signed off to do the federal government's paperwork to which we need to get done to take care of the insurance
and the situation. Yeah, the only thing that I would say if we're just openly talking here is that FEMA doesn't need it because it's already been certified once. The only time that they would need it is if there was a question whether the ability to function was there. So meaning if someone questioned its functionality, then FEMA would then require them to take a look at it. But it is a great question. It's also a great question the way our agreements are signed with Highland and Hammond, it's based off of whether they pass the Army Corps inspection, not whether they pass one of our independent inspections. Now, we're going to use it based off of their criteria, but it's a great question.
So are we calling legal at the Corps along with the Colonel to find out the answer?
I don't. That came up just this afternoon. There was the question that I came up with them, asking them, how are you certifying this? How does this get into your report? How does this get into your national database that they do and that they have out there of all the levy segments throughout the entire country? I don't think this is a
thing that they remember the whole country.
Yeah, no, there's a levy database. You can go on. There's a website, and you can check the status of every levy in the country that they have ever built.
Okay.
But it's a good question. I don't have an answer.
So are we currently seeking these third parties to make sure that we go through and exercise all of these to the specifications of the Corps? And
yes.
Is it only necessarily do that once a year at the inspection, but exercising those gates?
The communities are to exercise the gates twice a year by their standards, and they do because we check with them. And then what they do is they grease them, and usually they do it in the fall because the inspections are in the spring slash summer. So they'll go in and use the grease gun, run them up and down and check. Now, of course, we've had a case or two where the gates haven't gone up or down, or they've fallen off the rail for whatever reason because of the season, the rain. But you know, the cities and towns are it's important for them, for these gates certainly to work, as much as they're happy and excited for us, for them to work as well. So we want them to work. They want them to work. There's nothing that they should hide because we go in and fix them anyways.
This all came up today.
Well, the thought of them not doing inspections has been brewing. And I, like I said, I know I brought it up at a meeting, and it was probably 9 months ago. It wasn't until
I said plan on.
Well, and Jody knows this because she got copied in this email. So it came up on a Thursday, last Thursday, when they said, we've got one person and here are the dates that you had. And then that was followed by, which will be later on this status report, a 408 request. And then I may have had an out-of-body experience and sent an email to them basically telling them that I'm done with everything else until you get your 408s accomplished. You can't even get enough people to do an inspection. You know, it feels as though we're not being considered, whatever, you know, as a part of the team, right? So they came in today and sort of was like, we can get one more person. Well, one more person isn't going to help us get this accomplished. It's a great question that you have, and that is, how do they validate what we're sending them?
Another question is, hey, if you guys got some people that are acceptable to you that we can use to do this, and then you accept their report as it's then.
So we explained to them that we were going to hire a firm that has the electrical capability of pump stations, that have the mechanical ability. I mean, I've been on enough of these that I could, and with all those reports, I could sort of formulate what their proposal needs to say. We need to just make it into an acceptable format for them, minus the comments about cracked and peeling paint, you know, like really the nuts and bolts of whether this is working and it's functioning the way it should. So hopefully between myself and the experience that I have given it to qualified individuals, because they bring the same type of engineers, they bring the civil, the mechanical, the electricals, and you're going to put them in the same room and they're going to look, whether it's arc flash, whether it's properly designated a certain area, whether the lights are all working on the panel. So
go down the checklist and
here's
my checklist and everything is functioning and here's the report
and then
you guys are okay with it and
do they accept it?
Move on.
And this may be the thing going forward. I mean, they barely had enough money to do Gary and Griffith this year. Now my question was, why did you put 15 people on it in Gary and Griffith and why didn't you split it up half and half?
We use all the money.
Right. So this may be an ongoing issue even further as we get into the Gary levies next year. I don't know their budget situation. This has been brewing before anything going on in the federal government. This has been brewing since 2020, where they were looking outward and seeing that they may run out of money. So this has now come to roost.
Outside of looking at third-party engineering firms, what else are we doing so when we have to go through this exercise next year, there's a better game plan? I mean, are we talking to the core? Are we trying to figure out the answer to these questions? Obviously, you're frustrated, so then we go to the next level if you're not talking to the colonel, or is it just you're getting the same back feed? Because there's a lot of things that they're holding up because they're not delivering anything that they are supposed to deliver as a part of the process. And I'm trying to see if there's a way that we could work through that and still take care of the system while not worrying about, you know, bureaucrats.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they even mentioned this is a bureaucratic thing. And I go, that's the problem. So what we're going to continue to do is keep on maintaining our aspect, because we take care of Gary. The Little Cal Commission does, minus the city. But we do the pump stations. We do the gates. We have a group that hired that does the gates. We do the levees. We make sure the levees are all in good working order. As far as the inspection, It's still going to come back to your root question is, will you accept what we give you as acceptable so that you can submit either a minimally acceptable? Because if it becomes unacceptable, it's not necessarily the flood insurance, but if there's a tragic event, we then, not we, but the residents miss out on the flood insurance protection, because if it's acceptable and it floods, then you're covered by that insurance.
Okay. To be continued.
Well, I figured I'd lead off with a good
one. Yeah, great.
You're welcome. So going back to the 408 status is what started this whole entire 48 hours of fun. They did promise that the gate wells, which is the area by the SSCVA and the gas station off of 41, to be submitted to us for final approval here. Hopefully, they said by the end of this month. I'll take the over. We'll go to streamback stabilization, which is something that they pointed out in their 2023 inspection report to us, that especially around Grant Marsh, the area across from Bering Pump Station in Munster, there's a little small section of forest in Hammond. We submitted exactly what they wanted. They have to go through their environmental side of things to make sure that it's acceptable. So those two are the ones that we have sort of a path for. The Kennedy Sandbar, we were recommended that we go directly to speak with IDEM about that, which is fine. We have a good relationship with IDEM, so that was decided today that I will go do that. And then the drilling for the geotechnical analysis, we have submitted the revised drilling plan based off of what you guys passed last meeting, and they are waiting to approve it. And I said we gave you everything that you requested in your response back to us.
Did those people get laid off?
No, they're still there. So that's good. Any questions that then I'll eventually get into good news, I think. State Board of Accounts came in, first time in 5 years. We were audited for 2020 to 2024. Everything seemed pretty good. Our financials were good. They have some, I guess there's two ways to do it. They put it in a management letter, which is a letter basically saying these are our recommendations. And then they cite things, or they make comments. And one of the comments was our Hobart Marsh checking account. And I will tell you, between Jody and Tom, they are the greatest accountants that they will ever be. And they check this. So the money's all good. It's just a matter of they didn't care for the way we reported it. I will tell you, in the four previous audits, we've never had an issue. These have all been there. Just this guy's flavor of the month. And
we reported that there we have the money, but they didn't like the way we typed the font or
correct.
What?
Almost. I mean, if you remember, they didn't even want paper at one point. They didn't want Excel, or they wanted paper. Then they have graduated now. They'll take Excel. But we download things every month. Jody downloads things and Tom downloads things every month to the state, and then they just take this. And after 5 years, if the worst thing that I've got to do on later on in the agenda is close out two accounts just to make it better, in the grand scheme of things, we came out all right. And more than all right, better. Right? I mean, so, Tom, if you've got anything, you were there at the exit conference. I mean, Tom does his own darn.
We're not that complicated, you know. I mean, pretty straightforward.
So where did all the money has to go into the general account? Is that the
idea? They would prefer.
Keeps it all in consolidated.
It's a cleaner version.
Easier for us.
Now we'll go into some happy news. Dyer Ditch, we partnered with Lake County Drainage Board to clean the Dyer Ditch from 73rd to US 30. First time it's been done in about 15 years. So if you could just imagine, if you take Kamet Avenue down to where it tees off, we were all back in there behind Myers Castle all the way to 30. Now, we have done Dyer Ditch north of that segment, but never south of that segment. The commissioners this morning approved our Hart Ditch Stabilization Interlocal Agreement, which is on your agenda here for approval. The amount now in there, I think it's $1.2 million and some change. This is our fourth phase. This will go from north, go to Franlin to the 9300 block of foliage. And then our plan is later this summer to have the plans ready to go from that segment all the way to the utility easement, which is where Schoon Ditch and Katie Marsh are merging, or where the confluence is. And then after that, when we get into Hill and Vale, it's going to get a little bit more difficult because those banks become a lot more vertical.
Are there challenges with this next phase? I mean, all of those backyards, that's one of the most densely populated areas of the system, and a lot of water runs through there when we have more than 2 inches of rain. So
our only issue, of course, and it's going to be constant, is access. I think we have an agreement with a resident homeowner that is going to allow us to use their side yard to get access down into the river. If you've seen this before, how they've done it, they go down, take the excavator into the water, and they work from the water. Man, the lowest and most responsive bidder, just for the record, was Austin. So they have done the three previous projects for us. So they're familiar with it, familiar with what needs to happen.
How many more phases until we get to the high velocity channel, which is Wicker Park, folks, where the Hart, it's not a ditch, the Hart Waterway hits the Little Cow.
I would guess it would be three and three after the one we just got awarded. So the one would next be go to the confluence of Katie and Schoon. The next after that could have to be separated in Hill and Vale, just because it's very vertical and it's going to be costly. So I'm guessing that's going to be split into two until you get to Ridge Road. And then once you get past Ridge Road, that will be the last run, because that's when the federal project kicks in. So you'll just have a small part there.
Thank you.
We requested proposals for professional engineering to design the Hobart Dam. We received two submittals by four engineering companies, so they paired up. One was Burke and Butler Fairman Seaford, and the other one was DLZ and SEH. We've had subsequent meetings with Hobart as far as their opinion on who they really want to go to the dance with. All firms are very qualified, can do this. So it's just a matter of, we're waiting on a couple more questions to be answered by a firm, and then we're going to have to sit down with Hobart to see what they feel most comfortable and how they want to proceed. We have our great, I will say, the Lake County Collaborative is here. Daniel and Harry and everyone else. I'm not sure who else is going to speak, but they know they have 15 minutes, so a lot shorter than what I have. And they're going to give you updates on the current projects, where they're looking short term and then long term, and then some of the aspects of and the West Reach, some areas that potentially could be improved upon. I hit the culvert inspections, the US GS main channel clearing. You know, because of the low water level, it seems as though more and more trees have been sort of got stuck, especially between Clark and Grant. And then we also have some at the confluence of Park Ditch and Little Cow. So we're going to go in there over the next couple of weeks and get them out. And so with that.
Any questions for Mr. Repe, excuse me, about what's going on in the field?
With respect, Dan, to the bridge work that's being done on 45th here, mm-hmm. Is that affecting any of the stuff that we've done and repaired?
Yeah, good question.
Previously?
No, but we were a part of the design underneath to make sure that it was consistent with what we were doing on the other side, on the downward side, downstream side of it. So it won't impact it, although I'll tell you what, traffic's going to be interesting with 45th being closed.
Everybody be nice.
Yeah, third party going back to the annual inspections by the Corps. Third-party inspections are not necessarily uncommon, and I hope that they would. Third-party independent inspections are not uncommon, and I hope that they would, accommodate us in proceeding forward doing that. Whether it's, and I know some entities are private, such as, steel mills, but, safety related equipment such as cranes oftentimes do require somewhat third-party inspections, and I would hope that they would look favorably at, you know, third-party independent inspections for this particular application as well. I agree with you. I don't know why you would throw, if you knew you didn't have, you know, resources to complete the rest, why if you throw out a body that, you know, one particular site location. So I hope that they look favorably upon, and for us, and I'm speaking futuristically, that, you know, 2026 and going forward, this apparently is not getting any better, that they actually look at and consider that for us.
Well, they seem to accept our plan. Well, we spoke to them. We're going to memorialize it in an email. I'm going to give them the outline of what we are going to do and what they should expect as, in return. And then the follow-up question is what the chairman asks, and that is, how are you going to accept this? And if you are, is this going to be considered a part of a U.S. Army Corps inspection? That's important.
They currently take pictures, right, as part of the final report?
They do take pictures. And like I said, on a gate, they'll take a picture on the inside, on the outfall, and whether the gate's sealed. And if the gate's sealed, they move on. But they timestamp it, they place it, and then they have that as part of the full report.
What amount of corrective work historically while inspecting would they personally be involved with? Probably none, but
no, they just put it out to us.
We just sort of fix on the fly if we can and keep it moving. So
yeah, the most common issue that we've had for whatever reason is by the BMV in Hammond, where that gate for some reason has historically come off. Sometimes if someone raises it too fast, too hard, and it comes out of the top end of it, and it comes off its tracks. But we haven't had really any gate issues per se. Now we've had some pumps that are out of service, but we can note that and say that we pulled it out of service because it was being whatever, reconditioned. The impeller was being straightened or whatever. But we've not had any big issues in this segment.
It sounds like some of those, if we knew it's a dominant failure mode, then we can probably head those off before the inspection. If it's the same repeat, then you just want to do something about that before they get here.
It's typically the newer person that goes up, and we try to tell them not to do that.
Yeah.
Because the routine is you're supposed to hand crank the last, whatever it is, 6 inches up.
All right, thanks. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else? Questions for Mr. Repay? I have one. You were talking about paying the bills for cleaning the culverts.
Yes.
How many culverts under the expressway, again, for everybody, including myself, are we cleaning out, and how many are completed?
All four of them are now complete. There were four. There are now four that are complete. They are now off of it. They are now working on the culverts underneath.
Four structures with how many culverts?
Four culverts that are 9 feet in diameter that they're over 400 feet long.
But we're done.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Zoomers? No. Be there none. Next up, Mr. Repay, introduce a presentation.
Well, Daniel and Harry are going to sit there and decide who's going to be the one that wants to sit here and take my place and give their presentation. They will have already been logged into the meeting so that they'll be able to put their presentation and share their screen along with you. So they're more than welcome to come here, or if you want to sit at your chair, I'm assuming you'd like to come up here.
Yes.
So it's all yours. The hot seat is all yours.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Thank you for having us back. My name is Harry Kuttner. I'm the Calumet Program Manager with the Wetlands Initiative. We're one of the nonprofit partners in the Little Calumet River Conservation Collaborative. Usually present to you about two times a year with project updates. You all have been funding and supporting our work for a number of years. So just want to give you some general updates. I've got Daniel Suarez here from Audubon Great Lakes. And as a reminder, organization or our collaborative is Wetlands Initiative, Audubon Great Lakes, Lake County Parks and Recreation Department, the City of Gary, Nature Conservancy in Indiana, Basin Commission, and NIPSCO is one of our more recent partners.
Jumping on the coattails.
So just to orient everybody, this is a map, obviously not of the entire river basin that you all manage, but this is the stretch that we've been working on. So an overview of what we'll talk about. I'm going to give a quick update first on these three sites circled in red. These are our three ongoing restoration projects. We've got Highland Rookery in Highland, Grant Street Wetlands in Gary, and MLK South Wetland in Gary. Altogether, that's about 400 acres inside of the floodplain. And then we will give some updates on two larger ongoing engineering and planning projects. The one further to the east is the Hatcher Park and Marshalltown Marsh project. And the one in the center of the map is the Chase Street Complex, which contains the Grant Street Wetlands. And then we'll wrap up the evening talking about our grant funding and grant funding opportunities, as well as some future project assessments going on. So a quick update on our ongoing 400 acres of habitat restoration. So yeah, these projects are going along really well. This is about our fifth year in management. We have made some big headway fighting Phragmites and other invasive plant species. You can see the before photo and the after photo in the exact same location. Those are about 3 years apart. So we've got a lot of that Phragmites under control, and we are starting to do some more aggressive native plant establishment. The invasive management is still ongoing, and it'll be really important to keep up maintenance for the foreseeable future. You know, the funding you all provide is really critical for that. We use it, you know, not only to help fund the Lake County Parks crew and pay for contractors, but also to leverage many hundreds of thousand dollars of grant funding to support these projects. In the past year, we expanded native plantings by quite a bit. We planted over 8,000 native seedlings last year at those three sites and spread seed for the first time across significant acreage, about 90 acres across those sites, which is reflective of there being more open space, you know, because we've dealt with these invasive species. So going forward in 25 and the first half of 26, continuing management across that acreage and continuing to expand on that planting area and the number of seedlings that we can get into the ground. We have been aiming to do prescribed burning at two of these sites for a while, and we're hoping that in 2025, this winter, we can actually accomplish that.
And then if you can't, what are you going to do? Just move to the next year and hope that the obstacle goes away?
Well, yeah. So the obstacles have honestly been the weather in 2024. There's like a pretty tight window for prescribed burning. The other obstacle is working with contractors and getting them to prioritize our projects over other projects. But one idea that we've been, you know, tinkering with was whether or not our collaboratives field staff that are certified to do burns might be able to handle some of that. So that's one option that we're weighing. But yeah, I mean, we're working around the lack of burning for now.
And how does that inhibit what the end goal is in trying to bring back the natural environment?
Yeah, I mean, so like one really obvious issue is just like you've got all this biomass above ground with the standing dead Phragmites that we've controlled. If you don't burn it off in the winter, the following year, you're using a lot more herbicide to deal with those plants because, you know, you're spraying living plants that are growing up amongst dead plants, basically. The other thing is a lot of our native species, you know, these habitats thrive from regular burning of the site. So that, you know, reduces the speed at which native habitat can get established. But, you know, it's not totally uncommon that sites aren't able to be burned for various reasons. You know, NIPSCO has lots of natural areas they don't allow burning on for the most part. So, you know, we work around it. We do mowing, aggressive planting. We are optimistic with our two water control structures at MLK South and Grant Street. Those are being implemented. Those are in use. And if you go out to either of those sites are mostly flooded, which is fantastic for aquatic vegetation and marsh birds that are out there. And yeah, so just to kind of wrap up this section, so the Lake County Parks crew has been really, really critical. They've been hosting volunteer days throughout the year. We have hosted NIPSCO regularly for the past 3 years, I think, which is fantastic. They donate plant materials and are financial supporters of these projects. This past winter, we did our first series of volunteer seed spreading, which was like the second week of January, and it was extremely cold, but we covered 90 acres on foot, just walking around with buckets and throwing seed around. So, you know, just to say it once again, like the funding you all are providing, especially for the Lake County Parks crew, is critical for the maintenance and health of these sites.
Excuse me, just remind everybody again, the Lake County Parks is primarily responsible for the human capital in this.
So yeah, I mean, Craig is the representative from Lake County Parks, and yeah, so they're housing that restoration crew that you all fund.
Because if you don't do the maintenance, none of this stuff is going to make any sense, right?
Exactly. It'll backslide. It won't
kind of like the flood control project.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah. And Lake County Parks also provides some critical partnership in terms of thinking about like the long-term trail plan for this region. You know, how do we connect to the levee system? How do we connect to Lake Etta Park, Rivers County Park, stuff like that.
So the contract that we have now, Dan, help me with this, is with Lake County Parks for this initiative, but not with the wetland initiative. They get paid out of parks?
I think that's the way it was designed, so it's easier to facilitate the payment. So the answer is yes.
No, originally we had it with the environmental groups, and then now we have it with parks. So that's, I'm just making sure that we're not getting down a different path.
No, Parks submits the invoices based off of what they submit to Parks. We pay Parks.
Well, I know they're detailed. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
They are very detailed. Good job, Craig. I know you're there. There you are.
I'm just more interested in what the deliverable is and how well we're going to move this forward. Remember, not instead of the box, we want to continue to, you know, tie together with some sort of a plan as opposed to just patchworking it, which is what I'm watching so far.
Yeah, so hopefully as we move along with the presentation, we'll talk about these bigger projects and future sites. I mean, we see this as a long-term vision for the corridor. You know, our work out here started back in 2016 through just visiting sites, site assessments. And, you know, we've got this map I showed at the start that, you know, identifies potential locations along the corridor. So basically we've been building, you know, phases of work. We're now into these big engineering and planning phases to move forward.
Thank you.
And really quickly, we aren't going to bore you with a bunch of charts of marsh bird monitoring numbers, but, you know, Audubon Great Lakes has their monitoring program. There's 40 sites across the Calumet region. There's regular monitoring at Highland Rookery, Chase Street, Grant Street Wetlands, MLK South Wetlands. And this monitoring is important. It tracks the progress of these sites, the health of these sites. It's a quantifiable tracking of you know, the efforts that we put in. And we have seen positive impacts on marsh bird residency and breeding at these sites. And then going forward, just want to say that we are starting to expand other types of habitat monitoring so that we can track quantitatively the improvements that we're making. So rapid habitat assessment and vegetation monitoring. For our larger engineering projects, we are building in robust baseline monitoring that covers, you know, stream health, herps, reptiles, aquatic organisms, stuff like that.
So of the 40, going back to what's already out there and on this particular project, is there 5 or 6 monitoring sites within the project that you had on the aerial?
There are 4.
Four.
There are 4 with plans for potentially adding more, which I'll get into in a little bit.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to pass it over to Daniel.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us again. And I'm Daniel Suarez. I'm Conservation Director at Audubon Great Lakes. And when we were last here in September, we showed you some initial renderings from our engineering 60% design. That was developed by ECT with funding that came through the Coastal States Organization via NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And they developed a series of renderings of what the engineering work that we asked them to consider might look like in the future. And so I'll just preface this by saying this is a 60% design. So this is just getting us towards understanding of our ecological ambitions, which things at this early stage seem like they may be doable. And if so, what are some of the price tags around that? So the project was really based around re-meandering of a stretch of the Little Calumet River, as you see, as it runs here in the Southwest on MLK North over here, as it crosses MLK Drive into the Marshalltown Marsh complex is the name we call it. And then also with this city, Gary Park, Hatcher Park, literally connected to it by, a wood line there. And so the report we got in October, which was about 6 months after we had anticipated receiving it. So there was a bit of a delay there. But the report told us that there was potential for re-meandering the river, and it offered some potential solutions for what that could look like. The project would establish a good deal of floodplain habitat. So just floodplain, meaning that when the river floods either catastrophically or just naturally and like on a smaller scale, this is habitat that is designed to receive that water, thrives off of that water, and has a unique plant and animal community associated with it. The blue areas that you see on the map are potential areas where through excavation, we might be able to establish more permanent wetland habitat and hemi marsh, which is the habitat that we have been striving to create along these stretches of the Little Calumet River. It's what this part of Indiana would have looked like a couple hundred years ago, and their system designed to help keep water on the site for longer, help it slowly infiltrate the soil, and keep it out of people's basements. So the report, as you can see here, there's a good deal of wetland habitat creation. With all of the excavated materials, there's a potential to establish some higher ground and some berms on the exterior of the site, where we might be able to establish some permanent trails, some hiking trails. We have a limited ability to do that down in these deeper marsh areas, just because they're either going to face regular flooding, or there'll be some standing water, and that will wreak havoc on any kind of boardwalks or other trail systems that we might be able to establish there. So long-term, lots of really good opportunities, and like Harry mentioned, opportunities potentially to connect with other trails, gaps in regional trail systems. And so we're really excited about that. So from here, where we want to go, and I'll get to this in a little bit, is the next stage is getting towards the 100% design. But before I get into that, I just want to call out that, so this has been part of a 2-year grant through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
How much did they give you?
It was $307,000.
For this?
For the engineering work, yep.
Just for this project?
Just for this project. And okay.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And so as kind of the capstone of this project, we've been doing community engagement along the way with our partners at Calumet Collaborative and Brown Faces Green Spaces, and trying to get local residents' input on the Hatcher Park piece and then how that connects to the Marshalltown Marsh. And so next Wednesday at this time, we'll be having an event there, and we welcome anyone in the room, honestly, to attend. We're going to have some maps and going to kind of work to help people understand what the potential for the habitat establishment, establishing trails and amenities at Hatcher Park and the Marshalltown Marsh. We're going to have a native plant giveaway. We're going to have a photographer taking family portraits in the marsh areas, and just really try to get people comfortable with this space. A lot of the local residents know about this, may not have explored it, and people from outside of this immediate community have likely never heard of it before. So I'll send Dan that information, and he can send it around. So in this next phase of work, there is an opportunity right now with NOAA, again, to apply for some grants to take us from 60% to 100% design. And when we got the initial grant, NOAA told us that they wanted us to, by getting the grant, we were in a pipeline, and they would help us identify funding sources to get us all the way to implementation. And so things, obviously, as we know, on the federal level with funding have become complicated in the last couple of months, and the future of the funding is a little bit uncertain beyond these next couple of years. But this grant that we've applied for, it's basically the same program, but it's called the Transformational Habitat Restoration and Coastal Resilience Grants. We are going to apply for this one. We already did. We should hear back sometime between July and November. A little nebulous there. But this is probably, we put a very ambitious proposal together, acknowledging that there might not be large federal funding pots for this kind of work in the next few years. So our grant request is for over $6 million, as you can see there. That will get us to 100% design and permitting across the complex. And will also help us develop engineering and design for the public access and amenities at Hatcher Park. This grant required there to be some implementation. And so based on the 60% design report from the engineers, the lowest hanging fruits that we could add on to this to do some implementation would be replacing the culvert system under MLK Drive, which comes out at a price tag of roughly $1.5 to $2 million. So that's the biggest line item in that budget. But as part of this project, we would also facilitate fish passage, which, as we've learned as a partnership, if you want federal dollars, there has to be a fish connectivity component. So and at MLK North and this area that we call the Wedge, there's just that. There's a blockage there. The culverts are perched above the normal river levels, so fish cannot get to the western extent of just west of MLK Drive there. So we want to establish these fish ladder structures, which will help fish be able to access all stretches of the river, which will be good for the fish, will be good for the fishermen, and just generally for the ecology of the river. We're also proposing to do some invasive species management that would not conflict with any future excavation or earth moving that we might do. And then there's also some additional amenities there, including an asphalt trail that would connect Ironwood Park across MLK Drive to this Marshalltown complex with a pedestrian crossing. And as we know, this area is a very popular fishing spot, and the fishing that happens there, it can be unsafe. And so we're also considering the construction of a concrete fishing platform that would give people safer access to that stretch of the river. Seems like people are going to be out there, you know, regardless of how safe or unsafe it is. And so we want to help connect people to that resource and do it in a safe way. And as Harry mentioned, this is the other big complex, the Chase Street complex that we call, which also encompasses the Grant Street Marsh. The Marshalltown Marsh complex is about 400 acres. This is almost double in size. This is about 800 acres. And similarly, the Wetlands Initiative has been leading this project with all of the same partners to similarly do a 60% engineering design to evaluate the potential for remeandering of the river through this stretch, the creation of more permanent native vegetation, and also looking at potential community amenities, establishing trails, and you know, just generally places that people can enjoy a picnic or a hike. And so they are still in the middle of that grant, but are also looking at that next phase of 100% design. And so there's going to
let me just I know we're going a little long, but let me just provide a little more context. So this, we're a year and a half into this project. We have a $50,000 grant through the NYSERS Charitable Foundation, which is great. That's the first time that NIPSCO and NYSERS are partnering with us on a high financial level. They've got their right of way corridor and their Taney substation that runs right through there. They've got high powered electrical lines as well as buried gas lines through there, as you probably know. And then we also have I think it's $290,000 grant through the National Coastal Resilience Fund, which is housed at the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And so that is to pay for our 60% designs and pretty robust start to community engagement. So we've put together an 8-person community advisory board made up of residents of Gary, community leaders, to give some input on sort of this project and sort of start to build general community excitement and interest in the site.
Harry, what's the split between the engineering and the community engagement on this 290?
Cost-wise, that's a good question. I would say probably 2/3 to 3/4 of the project cost are going to the engineering and restoration planning at this phase.
For the entire site?
For the entire site, yeah. I could get you the final numbers later.
No, you should go ahead.
Yeah, and just, you know, for context, you all invested in the Spring Park area where that artesian well is on Chase Street. And then there's two Army Corps mitigation sites where restoration has taken place. Those areas are in pretty decent shape, but, you know, what we'd look at is sort of connecting them with the greater site, building in better trail connections. Yeah, so pretty exciting site. And that grant ends at the end of this year. We just submitted a pre-proposal for the next phase of funding. This is also a funding pipeline, so they will hopefully be looking favorably on our project since we're already in that pipeline. So our pre-proposal just went in a couple of weeks ago. Funding request for just under $800,000. And if funded, or if invited to a full proposal, that will go in later this summer. And if funded, that would be for January 2026 through the end of 2027. And that would be a pretty quick turnaround to take us from 60 to 100% design for not only the remeandering and restoration, but also public access amenities and improvements. You've got the potential for, I think, 8 or 9 miles of trails through the site, you know, linking up with your levee trail that already exists, linking up with the Nipsco right-of-way, which we see as pretty hanging fruit. And then also linking up with Lake Etta County Park, which is just adjacent to the site. And yeah, I mean, just to those bullet points on the right, you know, these projects are being designed, both this one and Marshalltown Marsh, to have no negative impacts on flood control. We're still hoping to find, you know, net positive for flood control, increasing flood storage capacity. And yeah, these are opportunities to improve conveyance of water through the system, control invasive species, increase biodiversity, and turn both of these sites into just pretty major, pretty major amenities for the region in terms of public access and access to nature.
Cool. Any questions for these gentlemen?
Last thing, we just want to say, this is a slide put together of the grant funding that we have for the past 2 years and then what we've applied for. So on the left side of the screen, we have secured already in hand and spent a lot of over $1 million in grant funding. Your annual funding of our work is used as critical leveraging and match funding for those federal
grants. But not on your presentation.
Right. This is just grant funding. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. On the right side of the screen, we've applied for over $7 million in grants in the past 12 months. And if approved, that would be funding for 26, 27, and 28. Again, your funding of our work would be really critical leverage funding. And then just...
Yeah, we just want to acknowledge that, like Dan was hinting at, I don't know why this slide is so wonky, but
sorry, it happens to the best of us.
Last summer, we had an initial conversation around this, the Hearts Waterway and the confluence with the Little Calumet River. So we had a good meeting out there with the Wetlands Initiative engineer, Gary Sullivan, who actually he's presented at this meeting and he's just recently retired. So we had a good field visit there and developed, I think, some decent ideas. And it sounds like Craig Zanstra attended a recent meeting with City of Hammond and some other local officials to discuss potential for future work at this site. We are currently, this growing season, going to be evaluating the Carlson Oxbow Park as well. We have some federal grant funds that are somewhat flexible. And if it seems like we might be able to do some work out there after some initial assessments, we would be happy to divert some of those funds to do some initial invasive species management, Phragmites management at this Carlson Oxbow Park. Besides its potential for marsh habitat, this has been, according to the president of the local Dunes Calumet Audubon Society chapter, one of the top three stopover habitats for migratory shorebirds in Northwest Indiana. So the other two being within the Indiana Dunes National Park.
Who's this local person you're relying on, Daniel?
Oh, this is a local birder who's part of the Dunes Calumet Audubon Society. They know all the good bird spots, and they've told us this is one of the best bird spots for shorebirds in Northwest Indiana. So knowing its potential for that and for marsh habitat, we're going to take a good look at it this summer. And of course, understanding that the ownership with between the city of Hammond and with the commission, we'll talk with you all before anything happens to get any approvals and support if we do end up going down that route. So excited to expand the restoration work there. And this is also one of the sites where we're hoping to establish monitoring long-term starting next year. And that's it.
All right, thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? Gentlemen? Only once. What about online, Mrs. Lambert?
I'm not good
at that.
Thanks.
You're good? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Moving right along. Next up, other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to deny Resolution 2025-07 and an interlocal agreement with the Town of Maryville for the Hendricks Street Drainage Improvements application.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And we have a second discussion. Mr. Repay, this was a pitch for Hendricks Street. What else do we talk about?
It was to, in their words, to prevent standing water in some folks' driveways and to increase better flow on Hendricks Street. They wanted 50%, and that was what the amount was.
Got it. So any other discussion with regards to this motion? It's a motion to deny the town of Maryville. No other motion. Mrs. Lambert, roll call.
Tom Roslinski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnecks.
Yes.
But we lost Commissioner Castellanos. Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to defer Resolution 2025-08 and an interlocal agreement with the City of Lake Station for their Central Avenue Stormwater Improvement application.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Discussion? Anything to say, Mr. Repay? I mean, this one is a big one.
Yeah, it's looking at $2.5 million off of an estimated bid at just over $3 million for us improving their storm waters in that neighborhood. Deferring it will allow us maybe to get better information from Lake Station as to what they can afford, or maybe a different approach than the $2.5 million.
Copy that. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Yes.
Dan, is this majority interior drainage? What's sort of
it's stormwater. It's a stormwater sewer that they're going to replace. That's the main line to a neighborhood. And I don't remember how many residents were in the neighborhood, but
a lot.
A lot is a good nerve.
Do you have a picture of where that is?
I could pull it up.
Mr. Chairman, a question for Mr. Repay.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, I was pulling it up. Is this the one they pitched last month?
I think so. Was that last month, Dan? It's kind of blurred.
Yes.
Jody?
Yes.
Yes, it was last month, Anthony.
Roger. Thank you.
Easter Raptor.
All right. We have a motion and a second.
I'll play sure. Come on, man. Do you want to just see the area? Is that what you're looking
for? No, I'm okay. There's a motion and a second. We're deferring it anyway. So maybe next time we could see exactly where it is and put up the application and be able to have some.
Well, we had the application earlier.
This is Lambert.
Tom Roslinski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnecks.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to act on Resolution 2025-01 approving a memorandum.
Is it approved, deny, or defer, Mr. Whitaker?
To approve.
To approve. All right. I thought I heard to act.
You did.
But he said approved.
I'll repeat. I'd like to make a motion to act on a Resolution 2025-09 approving a memorandum of understanding with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources for the management and maintenance of the Hobart Marsh Mitigation Site for the period of July 1st, 2025 through June 30th, 2027, in an amount not to exceed $175,000.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay, we're doing this Hobart Marsh mitigation for a long time, right?
That's correct. Before 2012, we're getting a phone call from one of our commissioners. Before 2012, the commission couldn't own property more than 1 mile away from the levee. DNR stepped up, purchased the property. This was a part of the mitigation as when we impacted the river. So they still maintain the ownership. Our agreement with them is they will, and our former commissioner, Derek Nimitz, will maintain. And so the reason why this agreement is for 2 years is because they can only sign agreements for 2 years, which is what their budget allows for.
Thank you.
We did one previous with them 2 years ago.
Any questions on this one?
It was roughly the same amount 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Commissioner Brodnick. It is the same amount. It just for abatement and for some type of invasive control.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Be there or none, there's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Brzezinski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-10, an interlocal agreement with the Lake County Drainage Board on Phase 4 of a Hartditch Bank Stabilization Project in the amount not to exceed $1,232,585, subject to review by our attorney, chairman, and executive director.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Moving right along, Mr. Repay.
With D, as far as the stabilization, the Lake County Commissioners approved that amount for the stabilization work. The amount is just over $1.2 million. The engineer's estimate was just a little bit less than that, but they've already passed it, approved it. Burke has agreed that it was considered an acceptable bid. Austin was the lowest bidder, and Austin has done all the other previous segments in our. So it's ready to be signed and ready to proceed.
Boots on the ground this year?
For sure. Boots on the ground probably in a couple of weeks.
All right. Motion and a second. Any questions or comments to Mr. Repay on this one? Zoomers? Either or none. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Ruschlinski?
Yes.
Tom Gostecki?
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick?
Yes. Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Moving right along, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to act on approving an agreement with Stan Tech Consulting Services, Inc. in the amount of $86,264 for annual monitoring and invasive species control of the Chase Street and Black Oak mitigation sites pending legal review.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay.
Yes, we used to have NCAP do this maintenance for us. They no longer wish to do that. We picked up Stantec, who also works with us in Lake Station. The amount is actually $2,000 cheaper than what NCAP suggested at $86,264. The area in question is, I put it up on the big screen just for your pleasure.
Perfect. What? There's two of them. What are we calling the Chase Street mitigation site?
No, the Chase Street is this here, if roughly this line here,
yeah,
all the way to this drainage ditch, all the way back to Spring Park. That is, I mean, it goes a little bit north of there, but, and then the Black Oak segment is in this area here. So this is Clark, this is Lake Etta, just for your ideas, and then this is the area that they call Black Oak.
Right.
It's 60-some plus acres, I believe.
So this is monitoring, not actually tearing it out?
No, they're just maintaining to make sure no invasive species. They'll go in there. The good thing is they will not burn. They're going to do it with backpacks and ATVs, so they'll be able to do it. And the NCAP has been very helpful telling them where the hot spots are, for lack of a better word, so that they know what they're looking for. And it's important to get this thing started now because there are some invasives that need to be controlled that soon.
Any other questions for Mr. Repay on this one?
Yeah. Are they just giving them kind of a professional leg up, or do they feel like they're not fully up to this task.
NCAP, I think they're more focused on Illinois. They've got so much work in Illinois and not enough resources to spread.
Yeah, but I, sorry, let me rephrase the question. Do you think NCAP feels like Stantec is not up to the task, or NCAP is just being professional and giving them a little bit of a, you know, head start or leg up when you talked about telling them where the hotspots are and stuff?
Yeah, I think NCAP's just being professional. They're the ones that won the bid to do it.
Yeah, they were doing it for like 7 years or something, right?
Yeah. And so they won the award that was for $777,000 from the Corps. So this is the in-project mitigation that was required by the Corps. So, yeah, they're just being professional. And the guy was actually really disappointed that he can't keep doing this because he really enjoyed this site.
Roger. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Just my comment for the record. I really think that this is something that we should train local or find some folks that can do this locally. A company in the community, Lake County, Northwest Indiana community. I'm not sure where Stantec's roots are, but I'm pretty sure that over the course of the period of time between the Lake County Collaborative and our resources here in Lake County, that we can get a company that can do the work, especially since it's, and I don't know, maybe it's whether it's, controlled burn or spring. I'm pretty sure that, between now and the time that this one is up, that we can find someone. That would be my purpose in the future. But I support it now because I know we're behind the eight ball here a little bit.
Any other comments or questions? Either or none, there's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnix.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Next two have to do with moving money into the general account. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-11, authorizing the closure of the Holbert Marsh Bank account and the transfer of funds to the general account.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay, State Board of Accounts.
Yeah, and the whole purpose of opening this account was when we were fighting the Corps for credits under Commissioner McCarron. He wanted to show them specifically that we had the money available to finish Holbert Marsh. And so now that's no longer necessary. And for State Board of Accounts purposes, they would like us to move it to our general account.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnix.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yeah.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-12, authorizing closure of a certificate deposit and transfer the funds to the general account.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay.
Under the advice of State Board of Accounts, they just wanted to make it cleaner, so it works out because it matured on May 18th. So we're in good shape.
Any other questions, comments? Be there or not, Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnix.
Yes.
John Beer.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. All right. Taking care of the business. Next up on the agenda is our next meeting date, which is going to be Wednesday, June 18th. Check the website and enjoy the nice spring weather, and we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
And motion in a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Closed. Thank you, everybody, for coming out.